Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Envision Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Gagan, and this week we're going to be talking about accessibility audits. I always just like to start off with this, and that's, why exactly should you care about accessibility? I mean, obviously, from a moral and ethical standpoint, it's good. It's good to care about everybody. It's good to include everybody as much as we can, and kind of creating those inclusive experiences, regardless of their abilities, is always a good thing. The legal landscape is also really important nowadays, especially, for example, here, there's ADA in the US, for example. There's loads of different legislations in the UK, in Europe, etc. The new accessibility directive that's coming into effect as well now very soon. So again, super important. And a lot of the time there's actually penalties for not complying with these different laws, guidelines, and directives, whether that be in a monetary sense or otherwise, it will depend on the exact guidelines. Obviously, the actual business case, as I always mention. So, I mean, over 1 billion people worldwide have a disability. It's roughly 1 in 8. So that just will help increase your audience reach, no matter what it is. If it's a document, an app, a website, whatever it is, if it's accessible, then more people can use it, go to it, or whatever it is. So, I mean, increasing your user base by between 10 and 15% is always amazing and really, really, really helpful. Just so you're aware, that statistic is from the WHO, and obviously that is a huge kind of percentage of the disability of the population. There's also some other reasons. So for example, improved SEO or search engine optimization. It essentially just means how well optimized your website, for example, is for showing up higher on Google's search results. This is often because accessible websites generally have better markup and different, like a better user experience, which can help boost your search engine rankings. Obviously, enhancing your brand reputation by demonstrating a commitment to inclusivity and accessibility, it can help improve your brand image and customer loyalty. I know I personally, if I find a website, I'm more likely to use it if it's accessible, and I'm more likely to stick with that website or that, you know, app or service or whatever if it's actually accessible. If it's not accessible, I will generally actually look for an alternative. Obviously, reducing legal risks, as we mentioned, is always good, especially because now you can actually have class action lawsuits and things brought against you if your products or apps aren't actually found to be accessible. Increased innovation. It can honestly usually lead to more user-friendly and innovative solutions for everybody. Instead of just cramming 100 buttons on a toolbar, how about we find a new innovative way to make sure it's easy to access all those functions in a way that's easy for everybody to actually use? And that would just make things better for everybody, not just people who have disabilities. So this episode is definitely going to be kind of a guide. It's not necessarily a guide, but there will be advice here on kind of how to do it and the different steps that are involved in conducting an accessibility audit. And if you don't know what an accessibility audit is, well, I mean, as the name kind of says, it will audit for accessibility, whether it's a PDF, a website, you know, an app. A lot of these steps are applicable to any kind of content type and a lot of different types of media as well. So that's kind of what this episode is primarily aimed at, giving you a guide as to how to do this. But even if you're just interested in learning a little bit about accessibility, you'll still learn a lot along the way, even if you aren't necessarily intending on conducting one yourself. So now let's actually get started here. So there is not necessarily a one-size-fits-all approach to accessibility audits. And that might sound a bit silly to you. It's like, oh, well, we're just doing an audit. Surely it's pretty simple. Well, actually, it's not, because there's a few different approaches that you can take. So there's manual audits, which is the more traditional way, and it can be better under certain scenarios, which we'll talk about later. But this is the more traditional way. So this would actually be conducting manual human testing and essentially evaluating your success based on the WCAG guidelines, which is just essentially the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. And they kind of give you a bunch of criteria that you can use to evaluate how accessible your, you know, website or content is. I actually did a dedicated episode talking about WCAG. So if you're interested in learning more, either head to that episode or you can read more about it online. There's plenty of different resources available. Now, when you're actually doing this, you'll use things like screen readers to manually test. So you will download a screen reader or turn it on if there's already one on your device, and you will then go and manually test as if you were a user, or you might get actual users to do it as well. So you'll be, you know, trying to navigate around using the keyboard. You might use the high contrast color theme, etc. And actually manually go in and test everything by hand, all by yourself. Now, with this testing, it is really important to have diverse testers. So by that, they might have varying disabilities or use different technologies. So for example, even if you're going to have multiple blind people using screen readers, or just multiple people using screen readers to test it, you should have them using different screen readers. So for example, one person might be testing it, you know, with NVDA, which is a screen reader, on Firefox on Windows. Then you might have somebody else testing it using Safari with, you know, the VoiceOver screen reader on a, you know, Mac or an iPhone or something like that, just to really get very varied results to make sure that you are kind of covering as many kind of situations as you possibly could. And obviously you would want people with different disabilities, somebody with like a neurological disability, etc., to help make sure that you're going to meet all those guidelines correctly. So the depth and accuracy provided by manual user, by manual accessibility audits is really, really great. Because you kind of get a much better understanding of user experience. Whereas with automated testing, as we'll kind of talk about later, it's more so just a list of things. You don't necessarily get to hear why it's bad from the user themselves. You just kind of get to hear that you didn't meet a certain guideline and this is how you should do it. Which is often really insightful, especially if it's, you know, a particularly complicated user interface or something like that. Now, obviously, if there's manual testing and that's one of the approaches, then you are right to assume that there is also automatic testing. So there's a lot of different tools and browser extensions, which we'll mention some more of them later. But for example, if you're a developer, you might use a VS Code extension. If you work in continuous integration, you might use something like Axe Core or PA11Y. Or if you're a QA engineer, you might use something like WebAIM, you know, or the Axe Core DevTools, for example. There's a lot of different kind of options out there depending on what you do and where you're kind of doing it as well. Even in Microsoft Word, and I believe all of Office 365, there's actually built-in accessibility checking into each one of those apps as well, actually. So that is kind of in itself an automated accessibility audit as well. So these will generally just pick up common accessibility issues. So for example, it will check color contrast. Let's say you have a button and the text on that button is white and the background of the button is light gray. Well, it's probably going to return you an error that says the color contrast between the background and the text is not sufficient and it should be equal to or greater than, you know, this contrast ratio. And I believe that changes depending on the level of compliance you're trying to reach, but it will actually suggest you a color, which doesn't mean that it will look nice. It's just the minimum color that you should use in order to make it high contrast friendly. And I feel like a lot of people forget that just because you're making something high contrast doesn't mean it has to not look nice. You can actually add high contrast themes to your websites. So for example, with Tailwind, for example, if you use the contrast-more selector, that will actually make it so that it will only apply when somebody has opted to use the high contrast setting in their browser or operating system, for example. So that means everybody will see your regular website unless they actually have high contrast enabled in their browser or in their operating system, which is obviously really helpful. Automated testing has become really popular. And actually, literally the day I'm recording this episode, I just had a meeting with somebody who works for another company who was asking me how we do our automated accessibility testing. And that's because it is very fast. and it can help you identify hundreds and thousands of accessibility, well, potential accessibility issues, hopefully you don't have that many, instantly, essentially, which is obviously really, really helpful. So, for example, let's say you are Facebook, okay? And you've been making Facebook now for the past over 10 years, 10 or 15 years, maybe longer, actually, at this point. You haven't put any work into making things accessible. And again, this is just an example. I'm not saying this is true because it's not. They definitely have. But let's just say they hadn't, okay? And they want to make things more accessible. But user testing would take a very, very long time and would be very costly. And that doesn't mean a company like Meta couldn't afford it or shouldn't pay for it. But let's just say they didn't want to. Well, they could, for example, set up a tool like PA11Y and tell it to use the Axe Core engine. And what it would do is it would, when they are, pushing new changes to their code, for example, it would scan everything that they tell it to. So, and generally what will happen is you'll either give it a list of URLs to check, or what's really nice is you can actually tell it to check your sitemap. And what that is, for those of you who don't know, it is literally a map of the different links on your website. And it's used by search engines like Google, but generally users don't get to see that. Some websites actually have links to their search maps. It's not as common anymore, though. But yeah, once you provide it with your search map, sitemap, then it will actually go and test every single page on that sitemap for the level of compliance that you've told it to. So then instead of Facebook having to test what I assume is potentially hundreds or thousands of website pages, all by hand to find any accessibility issues, they will be able to find a lot of them. Not all of them necessarily, but a lot of them. Essentially instantly, these tests don't generally take more than a few minutes, which user testing can take, hours, days, weeks, months, sometimes even longer, depending on the scale of the project. And what's nice about tools like this is they're kind of built into the development workflow. So instead of a user coming back to you and saying, oh, well, actually, there's a problem with this on this page, what will actually happen with the accessibility testing tools is they will give you exactly where it is in the code, exactly what file it's in, exactly what line number it's on, and exactly what the problem is. And sometimes they'll actually give you suggestions as to how to fix it, depending on the tools. It's also nice because it helps ensure that you don't introduce new accessibility issues into your kind of workflow, which is obviously not very helpful if you spend all this time making things accessible, but then you keep pushing code that isn't very accessible after the fact. You're just going to kind of degradate your work again over time, and then you're going to have to put a lot of effort in again, which is obviously not the goal. Now, what I mentioned earlier is very important to remember. Accessibility testing tools like that cannot and will not detect all accessibility barriers. For example, contextual issues, usability problems, etc. So just because your website passes all the tests that are performed by something like PA11Y does not mean that it has no issues. The thing is, it doesn't have any context. It's not a user. And as time goes on and we have better AI testing tools, maybe it will. But right now, it is essentially just looking at the code and saying, okay, does this meet the guidelines that I think it should? Yeah, okay, it does. So even if actually you've added, let's say you have a button, okay, and it opens your newsletter sign up, right? But you've added an ARIA label to it that says, go home. Well, technically, that's not going to fail any tests because it has a ARIA label, right? Even though it has an icon there, so it can tell that it needs an ARIA label because there's no text. So it'll tell you, add some text, add an ARIA label. And you add your ARIA label that says go home, but you're actually adding the wrong ARIA label because that's not what that button does. Now, that's the thing. Automated accessibility testing will not pick that up, whereas manual testing will. So it's important to keep that in mind when using tools like this, is they are not necessarily the be-all and end-all solution here. Now, I just wanted to give you some more examples here. So, for example, Axe DevTools Wave by WebAIM, and Lighthouse, which is actually made by Google. They actually use it for more than just accessibility testing. It's used for just website testing in general. It also happens to do accessibility testing. However, I do not recommend using it for accessibility testing solely, because it is not as good as something like AxeCore, which is a different engine that honestly, in my opinion, works better and finds more issues. For example, I've scanned something with Google Lighthouse, and it will give you a 100% accessibility score, which means, I mean, supposedly, according to Google's engine, all your, you know, your page that you're scanning is totally fine and has no accessibility issues. I've then scanned the same thing with AxeCore, using PA11Y, and it has found dozens or hundreds of issues. So it's really important to actually use proper tools here, and not just rely on something just because it's kind of built into a tool you might already use if you're already trying to look at your performance scores and stuff for Google. Now, you can probably guess what my recommendation is going to be. Well, it's a hybrid approach. So it's using manual and automated testing. So generally what I will do, now this is because I'm a screen reader user, but generally you would probably do this the other way around. So for example, our components library that we're making at the minute in Vision Tech Core, I'll be making a component and I will test it as I go along with my screen reader to ensure that it works properly with assistive technologies. Then I will push the changes, and I will also look at them on Storybook, and in there is also built-in accessibility testing. So that will do things like check the color contrast, etc. So we kind of have both sides done right there. Now, generally what will happen actually is your developer probably won't do that. They might not, you know, test it with a screen reader, and they will push their changes, and then it will be checked against something like PA11Y, where it'll tell you if it finds any accessibility issues. Then you'll have your quality assurance people who might do accessibility testing manually themselves, and then possibly you'll do actual user testing as well once everything's ready to be shown to users, just like you would usually do with actual regular user testing. Just this one would involve people who use assistive technologies or who have disabilities, just to ensure that it passes that side of usability as well. So as I mentioned, that last part's really important. The invaluable insights that you can get from getting direct feedback from users with disabilities is really, really important. And I said, we'll also highlight things that your automated tools may miss, or even maybe it's not necessarily an accessibility issue, but it's more so a usability issue for people who use screen readers. So for example, and I'm going to use Storybooks here as an example because they're actually fixing it right now and they seem like really great people who really care about accessibility. Well, currently, Storybooks, which if you don't know, is kind of a, it's a place for you to have like different tests and stuff for different things you're making. So like, for example, we made a button component and you can look at it in Storybooks. You can see the different variations of button that we have, etc. And you can run tests. Well, visually, their navigation menu is on the left where you can look at all your different components and things that you have, and then the table of contents for the particular thing you're looking at is on the right. Well, actually, how it appears for screen readers is both of those appear after the page contents. It goes the page contents, then the table of contents, and then the general navigation menu. Now, that's a really bad layout, to put it nicely. It is horrendous, I hate it, it's not very helpful, and it makes literally no sense. But technically, that's not an accessibility error necessarily. But in reality, it is, because as a user who's using a screen reader, to me, it doesn't seem like there's a table of contents, because the table of contents has no heading, and it comes after the page content, which makes no sense. Also, the main navigation menu for the whole like website comes after the table of contents, which is after the page content, which is not where it should be at all. You know, when you go to a website, you expect the navigation menu to be at the top, at least in terms of, you know, screen reader perception, at the top of the page, where you can, you know, search for things, or you can click on different links. So technically not an accessibility issue, but it is a usability issue, and again, would probably not necessarily be found by automated testing tools. So obviously, user testing is really important, and it may actually bring up insights that you don't get from manual testing yourself with assistive technologies. So now, in terms of the logistics, so there are a couple of things to consider here. The first one is recruitment. So where exactly do you find these users? And now, there's actually organizations and companies out there that will help you with that, but generally, there's actually forums and things like that, or mailing lists, for example, where you can actually find a lot of disabled users who would be more than happy to help you out with testing. Now, when I say help you out, that does not necessarily mean that it will be free. I know sometimes some people will be willing to do that, especially if it's for something that they care about, or if it's actually made to help, you know, people with disabilities in general, then you actually might be able to get some voluntary help, especially if you're a, you know, lone developer or a small startup. Now, if you're a bigger company or you're just asking somebody to test a website that you're making that has nothing to do with them at all, well, then you will usually have to provide some kind of compensation. It's very hard for me to say what that might be because some companies will actually pay the participants, some companies will offer different gift cards and things like that. Just from a logistics standpoint, as far as where it's easier in terms of tax purposes and things like that. And there also may be other types of compensation as well. It just kind of depends, and the value of that will depend on a few things. So number one, it'll depend on where you are in the world and where your users are in the world. Because obviously a, you know, 10 euro gift card is not the same in different countries around the world. Here in Ireland, a 10 euro gift card might get you, you know, I don't know, some McDonald's fries and a drink. Whereas in other countries in the world, 10 euro will get you a lot further. So it's important to also consider the valuation of your compensation as well. Especially, you have to remember, depending on how big your project is, obviously people might not want to, you know, review a 100-page website for a few euro. They might be expecting something more substantial, and to be fair, it is probably fair of them to ask for that. Obviously, ethical considerations are important too. You know, these are, you know, obviously disabled people who are going to be testing your products, websites, and apps, and you want to obviously make sure that your testing that you're getting them to do is actually suitable and is actually going to be, like, okay for them to do. So, yeah, really important to consider all of those things. Now, with all that kind of background information out of the way, we can finally actually get talking about the actual audit process, and we'll get into some actionable steps here. So step number one is define the scope. So this is obviously really important and can vary a lot from project to project. For example, if you've done some accessibility testing on your product, service, website, whatever it is before, you might not need to test the whole thing. So you're going to want to sit down and identify the areas of your website, application, or content that will be audited. This could be specific pages, user flows, or components. So let's say you've had a website now for quite a while, and you've had it tested before, and it's all good now. You fixed all the accessibility issues. Well, now you've added a new login feature. So you're actually going to want to, you know, have that tested. You're going to want to have the user flow tested for, okay, user comes to our website, tries to sign up. So we'll test that. We're going to have the login part tested. We're going to have the forgot your password part tested. We're going to have to test the account page. And that would probably cover you for the login section. Obviously, if you have extra functionality tied with that or that is new, you will also probably want to test that as well. But it probably wouldn't require you to test, you know, your about page or your home page necessarily. So defining the scope is important for multiple reasons. It will possibly save you time and money, and it will actually let your testing be a bit more targeted, which is obviously quite important. Now, step two is to choose your methods and tools. So based on the scope and resources, select the appropriate combination of manual testing, automated tools, and potentially user testing. So for this step, all right, we'll talk about a couple different scenarios here. So let's say you're an individual developer. You might not have the resources to pay for user testing. So you will sit down and you'll say, okay, well, I'm going to download NVDA and I'm going to test it myself. I'm also going to add PA11Y to my CI so that whenever I push new changes to my website, it will be tested for accessibility automatically. So that right there will have you covered. But if you're a big enterprise, for example, like Google, you might say, okay, we're going to have our QA team test this user flow in different browsers with different screen readers. We're going to have them, you know, try out our high contrast theme. Then we're going to run all of our automated tests that we have. And then we're going to pay for, you know, however many users, let's say 100 users, to test this new feature that we've added, or to, you know, test this new section that we've added, whatever it might be. So this will vary very, very wildly depending on your actual requirements and your actual resources available. So it's also important to consider what it is. That will also tell you a little bit more about what you might need to do in terms of testing. For example, if you are creating a button, you know, you probably don't need to have user testing on the button. You can probably assume that manual testing and automated testing will probably cover you for that. Now, if you're using that button in a website that you're making and you have all these other components that you've made, you will probably want user testing to make sure that all of these things are working together properly. So that right there is exactly why you need to kind of consider the different tools and different methods that you might need to use for your specific scope and your resources that you have available. Now you can actually get started with step 3, which is to conduct the audit. So, for example here, manual testing techniques. You're going to want to do keyboard navigation testing, screen reader compatibility checks, and you're going to have to use obviously different screen readers like NVDA, VoiceOver, JAWS. Obviously you're going to want to check color contrast analysis, and you're going to have to check the different standards. So, for example, for the WCAG AA and AAA, there are actually different contrast ratios required for those. So you're going to want to make sure that you're actually meeting the guidelines that you are, you know, set out to kind of to actually meet in the first place. Obviously, reviewing semantic HTML structure at this point as well is really, really important. So this stage is quite important, but this is the initial stage. This is where you go through and you press the tab key, make sure that it brings you to all the different buttons and links and things that the user should be able to interact with. This is where you go, you click the button that lets you sign up for your newsletter and make sure that it actually moves your focus or the user's cursor into the text box where they can type their email. Or if there's no text box in the pop-up, that it at least moves them to the pop-up, because that often enough doesn't happen and it's very frustrating. It's a screen reader user. So now next, you're going to want to move on to the automated stage. So at this point, you'll be using tools like PA11Y, Axe DevTools, WebAIMS, Wave, Website Checker, etc., etc., etc. So you're also going to want to understand why an issue was flagged and not just the fact that it exists. So this will allow you to, number one, avoid having that happen in the future, and also to better fix the issue. So at this point, then, you're going to want to actually document your findings, which some of these tools will actually do that for you. And you're going to want to obviously have the specific location of the issue, the URL or component, a clear description of the barrier, the relevant WCAG guidelines that were violated, the severity of the impact on users, ideally some solutions or maybe even best practices as well. So that right there will kind of give your developers an idea of what they should be working on and also how to fix it. So if I just say, oh yeah, about page color contrast isn't great. I mean, okay, that's fine. Where on the about page? What color contrast on the about page? Is it the whole page? Like, is it everywhere on the page that it's a problem? Is it the text in the background? Is it, you know, the drop downs that are there? Is it the images? What is it? So you need to establish, obviously, and say, okay, yeah, the expandable section, the kind of text that we use for that, and the little icon, that right there does not have sufficient color contrast against the background color. We need to increase that because it actually breaks this WCAG guideline. I suggest that we change it to this color instead. And again, a lot of these automated accessibility tools will actually do that for you, which is really nice, but not all of them do. It depends on which ones you're using and at what point in the development life cycle you are actually at as to how much it will, how much like information it'll be able to give you. Step four now. So that's prioritizing issues. Not all accessibility issues are created equal, so you need to be able to learn how to prioritize them. So you need to prioritize based on, first of all, severity. So is it blocking access or critical functionality? If so, then it should probably be top priority. Obviously, impact. How many issues are how many users are affected by the issue? Frequency. How often does the website does the issue occur across the website or application? Implementation can also be a factor here as well, because obviously if it's going to take 6 months to fix that problem, then you might be better off fixing some other stuff first. So obviously this is really important, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of these things. So for example, severity. Okay, let's say your social media icons in your footer aren't labeled. That, in reality, is not high priority. For you as a business or whatever, it's great for people to be able to follow you on social media, but that is not integral to the functionality of your website. For example, if your login and sign-up buttons are unlabeled, that is far more important than fixing social media links. So that would be, you know, a higher priority than fixing the social media links. Impact. Obviously, let's say you know, okay, you know that most people aren't using, let's say, or aren't looking at your about page, okay? Because generally, a lot of people don't look at about pages. But there's, you know, an accessibility issue on there that is relatively severe. So let's say your expandable sections in your about page don't open when you're using a screen reader. But you have a dashboard page that every single user uses, and there are, you know, expandable sections on there that also don't work. Well, obviously the expandable sections on your dashboard page are going to be much higher priority than the ones on the about page. So therefore, you would obviously focus on the dashboard page as well. Frequency. So obviously, how often does it occur across the website? Because if there's a problem with every single expandable section on your website, that's a big issue. And you might be able to fix all of them at once, actually, depending on how you have created your website. So, you know, or if it's, let's say, alt text on your images. If none of your images have alt text, or none of your icons have ARIA labels, again, that could be something that's quite widespread across the whole website. Whereas, let's say it's just color contrast on one block of text on a random page. Again, it only occurs in one place, probably isn't going to affect too many people, so that wouldn't, again, be top of the priority list. I said ease of implementation. Is it just adding an ARIA label to something? Well, let's just do that as quickly as possible. Is it adding closed captions to all of our videos or audio descriptions to all of our videos? That might take a little while. And although it's still very important, especially if you're trying to meet the AAA guidelines, well, you might not necessarily have the time to do that right now, so you're going to want to get a lot of things, as many things out of the way as possible while you can, especially if you're in a more resource-constrained environment. So next is obviously actually implementing the accessibility feedback. So this is where your audit results will turn into tangible feedback, tangible improvements. So you're going to want to understand and validate the findings, so make sure that your development team can understand the reported issues and can reproduce them. So you're going to need to provide clear documentation and, if possible, visual examples, for example, screenshots and or screen recordings of these issues, just so that people can really understand what the problem is, so that they can better fix it. You're going to want to develop an action plan so that you can prioritize the different issues and assign different people to fixing different issues, and obviously establishing realistic timelines as well. Obviously, integrating accessibility into the development workflow is really important, and emphasize the importance of kind of integrating it into the entire development lifecycle, whether it's planning, design, development, or testing. Again, all really important, and you can consider accessibility in every single one, and it will actually make things a lot easier down the road. Obviously, having accessibility testing for teams, so for your designers, your developers, content creators, testers, etc., to build awareness and obviously better skills in terms of avoiding, fixing, and finding accessibility issues. Obviously, having things like style guides and accessibility guidelines, even just internally, to ensure that you are kind of staying within the standards that are set, is really important, and just to help people adopt kind of the internal accessibility standards that you've set. Code reviews for accessibility are really important. I said tools like PA11Y will actually help you integrate that into your code review process so that when you open something like a pull request, which for those of you who don't know, it's essentially just where you are submitting a request to have your changes that you've made to the code put into the actual code itself. That way, other people can look at it and approve it or give you feedback so that you can improve on your work. Obviously, having automated tests to do that are great. And also, if you train your developers, they'll be able to look for accessibility issues themselves while they're actually looking at the code as well, which is really important. Obviously, testing and verifying fixes. Once you've actually fixed the issues, rerun your tests, recheck them manually, and make sure that the issues are actually resolved by using both thorough manual and automated testing. Because the thing is, you might fix one issue, but it could introduce a new barrier, for example. Obviously, if you can, involving users with disabilities in the verification process is preferable, because it will just help you make sure that it actually is accessible and working. Iterate and maintain. Accessibility is an ongoing process and is not just a one-time fix. As I mentioned earlier, you aren't necessarily going to fix every single accessibility issue at once, and also you might introduce more over time, especially if you don't have the right processes set up. Regularly audit the website, especially after significant updates or new features, monitoring user feedback, that way you can address any concerns that arise as well. Staying up to date on the latest WCAG guidelines and best practices is really important, and obviously keeping an eye on if there's any new tools or resources available as well. Because maybe there's, you know, a new accessibility testing tool that would work better for you and your team, etc. So I hope that gives you an idea of how to kind of conduct and implement accessibility testing and auditing for your specific project or whatever it is that you might be doing. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me, whether it be here in the YouTube comments or, you know, on Spotify, or message me on LinkedIn, send me an email, whatever works best for you. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that anybody has. As always, this has been the Envision Tech Podcast. I've been your host, Paul Gagan, and I will talk to you all next week.